Okay, I'm at beautiful Boise State University, and I'm talking to John Beter of the College of Social Sciences and Public Affairs, also the author of a wonderful book called An Enduring Legacy, The Story of Basques in Idaho, which he co-authored with one of his brothers, Mark Beter. Mark is also, John is also third generation Basque.
Correct.
Now, John, I just want to start with, if you could tell me, first of all, about the Basque Studies program here at Boise State.
Well, there's been a long time, a 30-plus year overseas program for so students that wanted to go back to the Basque Country and study there, but there hasn't been a connective program here. So within the last 5 years, we've begun a Basque Studies program here on campus that connects overseas study with local efforts at the Basque Museum and on campus here. And we've had just overwhelming numbers, far more than we even anticipated. A great start for us.
And what are the actual academic disciplines that fit into this program?
It's an interdisciplinary program, but it's anchored in the language department. Consciously because of the efforts in Euskera, in the Basque language. But there's everything from history to culinary arts to kinesiology to theater arts to history, political science.
Is it cultural anthropology as well?
It is cultural anthropology as well, yep.
And so when a person graduates from this program, do they get a degree from this program?
They do. It's technically, now there's a couple options. One is just a certificate in Basque Studies. The other is a minor area, international studies minor area endorsement with a focus within Basque Studies. But we've got students that are across the board, those that are interested in business, medicine, you name it. We've had one from almost every aspect of the college.
So in addition to being interdisciplinary, it's also very multidisciplinary.
Absolutely. It's attracting students from all over. Not necessarily those that are doing the full program either, just those that are interested in, curious or interested in taking a particular course. So, but attractive to a wide variety.
Do you find that many students are attracted to it because of their Basque heritage?
Interestingly, we've had a third to a half are connected because of their Basque heritage. But there's another half, or maybe even two-thirds, who are just either have lived in Idaho for quite a while and curious about the Basque, or have recently moved here and are curious about this part of it, or know something, bump into a Basque, read a story, and want to know more about it.
Now, you say they're curious, and I quite understand that. I'm wondering this is a speculation, but what do you think resonates with them? Why do they identify with this particular area of study?
I think that there is a curiosity to what makes the Basques unique. So if they do know a little bit about them, they'll know something about the language, perhaps, identified as one of the oldest languages in Europe, no clear historical history or tie with any other Indo-European groups in Western Europe. That creates a certain mystique around it. Here's this handball court in the middle of Boise, Idaho. They may have lived there all their life and never been in it. Here's this Basque block. What is all this about? So I think partly I think Americans crave something that's different, maybe something that isn't as mass-produced. And so they bump into this, and it seems to be kind of an ethnic gem that they don't know a whole lot about, and they want to scratch the surface underneath that and just get a little feel, a little bit of the texture, a little bit of the sense of what this culture is about.
But it's also very reality-based and very experiential.
Absolutely. Many of them will have gone to school with bass or attended a bass festival, a bass picnic, one of the wintertime dances. So a number of them would have been connected with it and just wanted to know a little more about the experience that they were a part of.
Well, let's talk about the nature of the Basque community in Boise itself. Can you tell me about that community?
Well, it's both very old relative to our state and brand new. And by that I mean the earliest immigrants came over 100 years ago, so we're into fourth and fifth generations. And at the same time, there are still a number of people, and with the ease of travel now, going back and forth they don't come to herd sheep these days. They come to learn English or to learn more about American culture and American ways. But, you know, that transatlantic exchange or conversation, I think, has really been renewed in the last 20 years. And so there's a vibrancy to the community here, even though some may trace their ancestry back four or five generations.
Tell me about the North American Basque organization.
Well, it's one that grew up in the 70s, about 30 years old now. And it grew, you know, a friend of mine who was just my neighbor growing up, we danced in Basque dancing. His parents were both Basque immigrants. And we knew there were some other dance groups out there, but we had no idea. We thought we were the only ones, the only show in town. And it was really something to go to. We traveled to a festival in Elko and saw this other dance, and we saw our mirror image, this group from California, from Bakersfield, California. And it was like you were connected, and yet you didn't really know each other, that each other even existed. Those kinds of experiences were repeated many times over, and so the idea was to connect all Basque centers, Basque communities within North America, within an organization, to co-sponsor festivals and all kinds of cultural events. And so it's been going strongly for the last 30 years, and has also made connections with a South American version of the same thing, and so this international web seems to be connecting even tighter, I'd say.
And this is a quote that I've read in many materials. This is a living culture. This isn't just you putting on your Basque hat.
No, I would say it is a living culture, and you know, to what degree and to what it depends on the individual and the circumstances that they're in. But no, it's not an archaic, I think, museum piece. There's a real vibrancy to it, and I think you get that sense if you spend some time around here and when you talk with folks and when you visit that, when you talk with that Nabo, if you attend any of their meetings, they have a festival coming up here in Buffalo, Wyoming, and you'll see a spectrum. You'll see those immigrants, current immigrants. You'll see those that go back quite a ways, but there definitely is a vibrancy to the culture. Yes, I agree.
And the implications of it being a living culture, the general public is quite used to the concept of Italian-American, German-American, Polish-American. What are the implications for being a hyphenated American in general, especially of Basque heritage?
It's a great question. And it's one that I think it's really what formed some of the foundational question of the book that we wrote. Wanted to understand what was it 100 years later, for those that came to the earliest, what continued that. And I think that there are both some things that are typical and some things that are different. The things that are typical that I would agree with, the sociologist Marcus Lee Hansen, who talked about a third-generation return, that there seems to be something that occurs. I don't know if it happens in Canada, but it certainly seems to be happening here. That by the time the third generation comes about, there's a curiosity that assimilated to a point where there's a curiosity to know more about what your grandparents went through. So it certainly seemed to be the case in my own family, that his saying was that grandchildren fight to remember what their parents wanted to forget. So in that sense, I think that there's a typical resurgence and revival of an ethnicity within this group.
Go ahead. Well, let's get into the history a little bit here, but also the, if I can, contemporary history. I don't know whether that's a contradiction of terms or not, but okay, for the listeners, Basques, an ethnic group, a race, a nation, who are they?
You hit it right on the head, and I would define it this way. Basques define themselves by the language, so it's not a racial designation. It's not even a geographic one. Although geography is very important, they would say Euskaldunak, a person who has the Basque language, is a Basque person. So by historically, they have defined themselves by language more than any other character.
But also a people without a separate nation, but definitely a people with a land.
Yes, no doubt. Historically much larger than what's designated today, but that region has had been inhabited by a group of people prehistoric times, far back, with no clear link to any other Indo-European group. So Basques would say those that the cave art that is prevalent in that region dates back to and justifies, in many ways, the current debate is a historical argument about who were these cave people, and Bass would claim that that is the earliest ancestors to the culture that, that lives there today.
And these are the mysteries that of their origins. So in terms of, if we can go through that again, you're saying that one of the theories is that the Basque people were an indigenous people, the first people in the Iberian Peninsula, well before the Roman Empire, even back to prehistorical times.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a folklore around it. So the folklore is that Adam and Eve were Basque, that, you know, and there's, but there's a bit more seriously, there are a whole series of stories that is certainly not unique to that culture, but the evidence, the linguistic evidence, the most common word in the Basque language is stone, seems to denote
Stone Age people.
Exactly. And so those kinds of connections would justify a claim to that area for since prehistoric times.
And on the theme of language defines culture, culture defines language, and that sort of thing, and especially for those of us who are used to Europe and Romance languages, talk to me about the Basque language and the linguistic roots. What do we know, what don't we know about the language?
Well, what we don't know is clearly a link to any other language. So it sets itself apart as an island language. And when you begin to study it, certainly in modern examples, you'll see the influence of Spanish and French if you just hear people speak. But when you get into the verb structure, when you get into the agglutinative nature, when you see the complexity of the verb and the way that they talk and the sentence structure, you begin to see that far from being a cave language that we tend to think of as rudimentary, very simple, it's extremely, extremely complex. It gives you insight into a mind that's far from that stereotypical cave image that we have of people kind of grunting back and forth to communicate. It makes the English verb look simplistic, looks infantile compared to the complexity of the Basque language. So for me, it's the key that unlocks the culture, both to understanding what it means. And then once you begin to speak it, it opens up doors over there that I don't think any other element does.
Would I be correct in assuming that there are ethnocentric issues that all of us have to overcome in order to understand a group like the Basques?
Yes, I would wholeheartedly agree with that. You bet. There are those same kinds of elements.
Can we talk about Basques and the issue of cultural survival, both in Europe and here in the United States? Cultural survival.
It's a great question, and inherent in, I think, is what does cultural survival mean? And by saying that, I mean, is it language that we're looking at it to survive? Is it sports, those kinds of things, traditional sports? Is it a traditional agrarian way of life? What are the core characteristics of Basqueness, both there and internationally? I was just reading a book the other day of two brothers that did studied the Basque diaspora in 20 different countries, trying to see what are those core elements. And there's a spectrum of that. You see a real revival of language studies in the Basque region itself and even outside of the Basque country, which seems to go against many of the, well, the numbers of languages that are disappearing yearly is sadly a very large number, but this seems to be going contrary to that. There is certainly a real revival around the language, because I think it's seen as the core element that most differentiates them from any other group. Sports has also had a tremendous revival, but day in, day out, what you work, what you wear, how you live, what are those key components that really differentiate? To me, it seems to be two core ones that I would point to. How do you communicate to each other? How do you spend your time? How do you enjoy your time? And so we're seeing revivals in ethnic music and dance and sport, and a large revival in language.
And all the cultural elements, which really are language unto themselves. Why, for example, is there a case to be made for the Basque diaspora can you do a comparison with, for example, French-speaking Quebecers in Canada or Gaelic speakers in Wales? Is there a similarity?
There is a similarity, no doubt about it. Those are great similarities, and Mass have looked to Canada, to Quebec in particular, as a model. How does this work? How do you become bilingual? How do you work in a bilingual educational system? How do you get a computer that will function bilingually? All of those things they've looked very much to Wales, to Quebec, to Irish-speaking provinces in Western Ireland in particular.
And the Basque Country now is an autonomous region or semi-autonomous region, or what is the degree of autonomy in the Basque Country?
I'll try and give you a simple answer as I can. Traditionally, the Basque Country was much larger than it is today. In the 20th century, late 19th and 20th century, it became seven provinces, three up on the north side, which would be in the French side, actually, and four on the southern side. The largest on the southern side is Navarre, which has sat outside of its own, has had its own history, if you will. The Roman influence was much larger in there in Navarre and in Araba than it was in the two northern provinces of Biscaya and Guipuzcoa. Today, the autonomous Basque region is only made up of three provinces, and Navarre sits as its own autonomous region, and the three provinces on the north side are part of the French country. So when we can talk about a traditional Basque country and then a legal autonomous region, and there's a real difference between those. Navarre sitting by itself, those three provinces, and then the three provinces to the north.
Conceptual differences.
Very, very. And that's why you'll get, linguistically, you'll hear it. They'll talk about, they won't talk about it as the French Basque Country. They'll talk about it as the north side or the south side. Very different, but the language gives you a sense of how they're envisioning that country.
Why Idaho? Why Boise?
It's a story that's mostly around sheep, which is stereotypical, but that's how it got there. And it's not really an east to west, but a west to east story. So many times we think of immigration, especially in the United States, as an east to west. If you're looking at it from a European perspective, it's all east to west. This begins as a west to east and then becomes east to west. What I mean by that is the earliest immigrants came up from South America, from the pampas of Argentina, many of them, came up to the gold rush, 49 and 50 in California. Few of them were involved in gold. Most of them got connected with livestock. The expression is an inferior animal herded by or worked with an inferior group of people, because the earliest Basques were not well looked upon at all. And as that began to be more populated and as opportunities grew out throughout the West, they fanned out to regions all around the American West. Idaho became one of the concentrations of that. Before, right around World War I, 3 million sheep, believe it or not, existed in the state, almost twice to three times the current population that we have. Very few people really understand that statistic. That's an incredible number of sheep. Outside of Sydney, Australia, Ketchum became the hub of wool and lamb. More was shipped out of there, was railed out of there than any other spot outside of Sydney, Australia. So Boise became the hub of boarding house life and immigrant life early on and has continued. But really it's all throughout southwestern Ireland.
And those young men, primarily young men, who came here in all the early years, a difficult, lonely life. Talk to me about the challenges that they faced that obviously were challenges of any new immigrant, but perhaps more acute for them.
You know, it's easy to get, I think, nostalgic and romantic about a pastoral life, but when you talk to them about the reality of it, and when I've read my grandfather's letters, you see it's a pretty dirty, grimy, pretty very, very lonely lifestyle. In fact, it was written into their clause. They formed a little mutual aid organization, which is what many immigrants did. Their clause, they had a clause in there that was a little bit different. The phrase was to become sagebrushed. If you were too long alone, that solitary life can have a way of kind of closing in on itself. And some of them, the clause within the insurance was for them to have money to be sent back to the Basque Country and to be cared for in case of this. If you're writing it into an insurance clause, it must be something that's happened more than once. And so you did see a hard work. More than anything else, though, I think the resounding sense I get from them is the loneliness of the job.
Are there contemporary lessons to be learned from the Basque immigrant experience to the West? Are there issues going on right now that that we can learn from?
Well, as we're seeing right now, immigration is the hot issue. Many would point to Basque, and it's, you know, as I mentioned earlier, they were not initially a well accepted group at all. So kindred spirits with Irish that felt the discrimination, and certainly with modern-day Hispanics. Many would point, this is certainly a debatable issue, but many would point to the Basque as somewhat of a model of a group that's been able to both maintain a certain cultural identity and assimilate into the culture here. Debatable. But I would say that many, if you just talk to many Americans, they would say Basque did it pretty well. If you ask that question to Americans in the 1920s, you wouldn't get that same answer. So maybe a little bit of time sheds some light on these immigration issues that are the current debates of today.
Let me do a segue to what appears to me to be a very strong sense of place amongst Basque people. Can you talk to that, the concept of a sense of place?
It's ironic. I've often felt that in some ways the Boise in this area is many ways a second Basque country for people. And what I mean by that is second and third generations will go away to study. They'll have their experience in Seattle or Portland or New York or whatever, but they'll come back here for exactly what you're talking about. It is a sense of place. It is a connection to a culture. It is a whole way of life that they don't want to give up. So they may taste kind of, if you will, kind of mainstream America, but often come back here. I think that's directly tied to that same sense of place that their, you know, grandparents, or even though they left that place. And that's what is the double-edged sword of leaving somewhere and being an immigrant and being a hyphenated place. You're both at home in each and not at home anywhere. And I think you have that, but that sense of place certainly has carried over to this area.
Right, and the French, of course, would call that a déraciné. Can we get into some of the maybe the bleaker moments in the history of the Basques and in the Basque country in Europe? I had lunch at the Gelnica restaurant pub yesterday. Gelnica. Most people would know that city as Guernica. Can you talk to me about what that meant? The fascists, the Spanish Civil War, all that sort of thing, the Second World War to the Basque people.
Basque history, in many ways, is a tragic one, but also an enduring one. Part of the reason why we tell our book that way. So if you look back historically, you see many battles, and often on the losing side. And certainly the 20th century is much about that. And that battle, or that bombing in particular.
Give me the details about that bombing.
Sure. It's in the midst of the Spanish Civil War. Hitler was looking for a practice one. It really amounts to that. Franco was looking to really knock the Basques out of the campaign. So he picked the city, which was historically the place of identity for the Basques. It was under this tree where for centuries kings had come to grant the Basques their regional autonomy.
That was the Gelnica oak.
Exactly, the oak tree of Gelnica, exactly. I was just reading an article John Adams wrote about democracy in the tree of Gelnica. So even American presidents had identified this place. It was particularly insidious in the sense that he chose market day, a Monday, when everyone would be coming out of the hills and to the town of Gernika. They had done a bombing of about a week earlier of a smaller place called Durango, but came in and the German really practiced their aerial bombing techniques on the Basque population. It was a horrific day. My neighbor was about 7 or 8 years old and remembers that day and the tragedy of that day. And we don't have that same sense for us because maybe the analogy is to see if, especially for Americans, when you saw those planes going into the World Trade Center, that kind of visual was so horrific. But imagine a population that didn't know airplanes and had never lived through any kind of bombing. This is really one of the first, if not the first, civilian bombings. They didn't know what was going on. They didn't really understand the full elements of it. Fire, and it just devastated that town. Picasso was looking at a way to depict the horrors of fascism.
Well, that's Pablo Picasso and his famous painting, which is called what?
It's called Guernica, an enormous painting that was actually in New York and not allowed to be in Spain until Spain became a democracy. The current debate is the Basques have a desire to bring that painting up into the Basque region and have it depicted there. The Spanish government hasn't allowed that to occur yet.
Basques as both a maritime and an agricultural culture, can you talk to me about that?
Yeah, I mean, there's a three M's there's to Basque immigration. There's merchants, missionaries, and mariners. Those three elements seem to be traditionally the aspects that brought them to the New World. Each of them at different times, the earliest being the maritime coast of Newfoundland, as we discussed, the South American missionary and later merchant efforts, and then the most recent 20th century movement into Idaho and the American West, which is agricultural livestock related.
Can you tell our listeners just a little bit more about that Canadian connection, that Newfoundland connection?
Well, there is a story that very, very few people know about, and that is outside of the Vikings, the Basques were some of the earliest discoverers of the New World. And it's a wonderful book, Mark Kurlansky, called The History of the Cod. And what he did, he traced that exploration, and we see it linguistically, evidence along the coast of Newfoundland that as they whaled, they went further and further away from the Basque region, further out into the Atlantic, and eventually made their way to the coast of Newfoundland. And all the way down, we see Cape Cod, a connection. We've seen evidence of the Basque there. So while it often goes to from the Vikings to Christopher Columbus, it's just kind of the common adage, there's certainly a middle spot where the Basque enjoyed a tremendous economic benefit in sociological and anthropological studies that are going on today note that presence in the New World much earlier than people would have any sense of.
What are some of the more controversial issues surrounding identifying who the Basques were, both culturally and anthropologically? There is a certain amount of debate in the area.
There is. There are some. There are a few kind of physical. There's a high incidence of Rh negative, for example, blood type that people commonly identified as a Basque trait. There are some kind of physical stereotypical elements, although those are fairly short lived because of the intermarriage and the long history of. Rodney Gallup called the Basque country a museum of Western Europe, that if you study the Basque, you end up finding remnants from all over. And I really adhere to that. And so separating out and trying to find things that are absolutely unique to the Basque become difficult. Probably the biggest, the most controversial thing is how rarely Basques are referred to in history as Basques. So Juan Sebastian Elcano, the Magellan died on the trip. It was Elcano who finished the trip. No one ever knows. No one ever talks about him. No one knows about him. Clearly of Basque ancestry, came from a small town. A fair amount of Columbus's crew was of Basque ancestry. We're able to identify that. The patron saint, the founder of the Jesuit order, Ignatius of Loyola, most commonly referred to as a Spanish nobleman, clearly of Basque ancestry. Basque was his first language. So all of those, the story just never gets told from that angle. And that's probably, from the Basque perspective, the most controversial, is because they're always identified as either French or Spanish and not uniquely Basque.
And contemporary public figures who are of Basque heritage?
Yeah, I mean, those that are on the world scene, I would say a couple in sports. Miguel Indurain, who won the Tour de France, I think it was 5 times, Basque ancestry. The golfer, Jose Maria Olazabal, clearly of Basque ancestry, but because of the border, you know, because of those kinds of controversies, gets lumped together as a Spaniard, and so that gets repeated to today.
Now, you and your brother wrote a book called An Enduring Legacy, The Story of Basques in Idaho, your brother Mark. Why the title An Enduring Legacy?
Well, it's book two for us. What we found as both, if you were trying to pick one word that seemed to be the story both there and here, there is something about Basque culture, and I think it's well represented in the sports, that enjoys a marathon more than a sprint, that there's something that has been adapted into the culture that says if you're going to last, it has to be over the long haul. And so enduring for us seemed, enduring legacies seemed to be encapsulating to both here and there the single element about this story. It just goes on and on. It continues.
And I want to, if I may, just quote from your book and then ask you to comment. In the introduction to the book, you say, the third generation, the ethnic generation, developed during a period of immense change in the United States. During the 1960s and afterward, it became less fashionable to be simply American, living in what many considered to be a bland vanilla culture, and increasingly popular to be from somewhere, to have an identity that set one apart. A preservation movement by a number of third-generation Basques in Idaho proved a theory, as you mentioned, proposed by Marcus Lee Hansen, what the son of immigrants wishes to forget, the grandson wishes to remember. And whenever any immigrant group reaches the third generation, he wrote, a spontaneous and almost irresistible impulse arises that brings together different people from various backgrounds based on one common factor, heritage, the heritage of blood. Can you just talk to me about the heritage of blood?
I just think that that is one of the, I really do believe that that is one of the foundational elements at work in American culture today. There is a sense that the progress, modernity, postmodernism, however you want to define it, has created an alienation, a separation, a disconnection between people. And there is a real craving for history, identity, roots, community, connection, whatever word that you choose, that ties people together. And I think the Basque immigration story parallels so succinctly with, and so the rhythm of that is so congruent, that's the word I'm looking for, so congruent with American history in general. What I mean by that is large numbers came in as part of that new immigrant 1880 to 1920 wave where 20 plus million came into the United States. Their children came of age during World War II, which arguably would be the American moment or the American defining moment, both globally and nationally. Now, the third generation is coming of age post-Vietnam, which is arguably the flip side of that, a time of alienation, of separation, but also a time where African Americans and the Roots phenomena, that movie Roots, if any of your listeners remember that whole phenomena of just trying to trace back where do I come from, resonated so well with the way that the story was unfolding for Bass, that the broader American story and within that the microcosm of the Basque experience was paralleled and so congruent that I think you saw an enormous resurgence in the 70s and that is continuing to today where that ethnicity, that identity of blood, that desire to be connected beyond a car that everybody else drives.
An enhanced sense of self.
Absolutely. Who am I? What is it that makes me unique? Where do I come from? immigration in American history is so forward-thinking, so pushing so far into the future. But there's a reaction to that action, and that is a sense of a craving for identity.
John, thank you very much for this.
Enjoy it very much. Thank you, Bob.